Nancy Esther James. Come on up here, Nancy, baby. Come on.
I apologized in advance for missing the first readers tonight, but I had something over at the Friends Meeting House that I had to attend, so that's why I was late. Well, last week I read poems from my chapbook that's just been published by Finishing Line Press, Resilient Spirit, Poems for Lorraine. And I read part of the foreword last week and explained that the poems are from the final years of my sister-in-law's life when she had dementia, and she, as this progressed, she lived in first a more open residence and then later one that was designed especially for patients in later stages of dementia. So I read three poems from the book last week, and I'm going to read a different one this week. And this one is Happy Birthday. An aide unlocks the outer door. I identify myself, sister-in-law. In your room, arrived before me, your daughter, her two grown girls, study a collage of fading pictures. Gallery you assembled long ago. In the hall beside your door, a black and white photograph reminds everyone who you were. Younger, but the same platinum hair. I tiptoe in. You glance up, puzzled at this new visitor, then smile. I must be one of those faces on peeling squares of paper. I point to an Easter snapshot, my mother in navy, I in powder blue. You joke. You sure look different now. Daughter laughs. No compliments from Mom. We remind you why we're visiting. Unwrap your gifts for you. Sing, Happy birthday, dear Mom. You chuckle in surprise. I gaze at the portrait by the door. Then your eyes spoke sorrow. My brother's, your husband's, death, 6 months past our mother's. Worrying how I'd manage alone, you made me one more child of yours. Happy birthday, Mom.
Barry Governor. Come on, Barry, get at you. Where you been? Oh, there you are, Barry. Go ahead, man.
You're right, I'll just sit here. First of all, thanks to everyone who stayed. Bare feet and summer grass. I watch summer waft through the windows. Zephyrs give the shears a soft caress. Start the flowing dance, fabric rippling in the gentlest of waves. They exude serenity. I'd forgotten that feeling, sheer comfort, complete contentment. Yet here they are, the zephyrs in the fabric dance. They take me back to times of bare feet, summer grass, wooden screen doors, to cup of sugar neighbors sharing cup of coffee lives.
All right, baby, there, all right, baby. Lucille Shivers, come on, Lucille. You want to help Lucille sit up down there? Okay, you got it. All right, Lucille, it's your chef, baby.
Burden of hope, wondering if medical science... Wait a minute. I need some more money. Burden of hope. Wondering if medical science had made any breakthroughs. I went to a surgeon about my eye, daring to dream that he could help me. I sat in his office without my patch, gazing in the mirror while he talked. He talked about cracking the skull, 50% chance of dying on the table, thick magnifying lenses. But he couldn't remove the scarring. Who did this work? He asked. I left his office knowing he would not give me what he could not give me what I wanted, a face that would be lost in a crowd. The shining blade had three times changed me, once just after birth, again before my teens, the third time in my middle years. Now a burden fell from my shoulders, an immense burden of hope, the huge amount of energy to feed and carry this hope I now use for living. Angel, from Oakland, excuse me, from Oakland, late one night, I was walking home. Snow was falling soft, and I was broken and lost. I stepped from the curb into the gutter, and suddenly, strong hands on my shoulders, one on my left shoulder, one on my right, four fingers of each hand in front, the thumbs in back. Words take so long to say. An angel lifted me, placed me on the curb, the way a child might lift her doll to place her somewhere safe, and the cars whizzed by. Thank you.
Doing a movie down my or reality TV show at my gym, and my friend Jersey's over. Say, hey, Jersey, yo. And she's the director, and I brought her here. It's really cool because all my kids get to be in the reality show because we always try to build hope and dreams. That's what I do. Or at least I think I try anyway. And you know, a friend of mine was died. Buried him Tuesday. He was a thief. But he was a good thief, you know. And I always felt he died from appendicitis and his poisoned him. But I always thought he was going to die robbing a church or something. But he kind of, you know, you can make fun on anything you want. I think that's what everybody runs around with a stick up their ass. Make fun, loosen up. And it's not a bad thing, you know, and love and reality and fun stuff. But loosen up once in a while. You can make fun out of the Bible. You really can't. Don't make fun out of the Koran, though. Don't do that. Okay. Don't do that, man. I didn't beat you to death with it. But, you know, like, I can prove it to you. You can make fun out of the Bible. Like a guy was sitting there. This man took this Bible, and it threw it. It's boom, hard as he could at him, hitting him in the chest. Guy fell down. When the ambulance came there, the only thing that saved that guy is he had a bullet in his pocket. You know, and see, you can't. I told you you could. And then the other thing, don't cast your pearls in front of swine. Did you ever hear that? Christ said that. Wouldn't it be better if you ran a whorehouse and said, don't cast your swine to pearls? It'd be much better, I think. Anyway. I always wanted to burn down churches. I always did, you know. I always wanted to burn down a church along with the jails. I wanted to burn down a jail and a church at the same time, maybe before I die, because I think there's a connection. I really do. I think that. I'm trying to remember what I had. But then, you know, but you have to be serious, you know. Don't you love echo placidly amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there is in silence? And people are vexations to the spirit. It's Desiderata. Did you ever hear of it, most of you? Read it. It's really, it's almost hokey, but it's really cool. I have it hanging up in my thing, Wordsmith. And Sandburg talked about the pebbles of destiny in your hand. The pebbles of destiny. I am truth. Holding the pebbles of destiny. And I write these crazy poems just like, yeah, we got. I wrote them. I'm not going to read them both yet. Melvin watches kiddie porn, smokes pot, drinks beer, and sometimes gets hit with a lamp. I'm not going to read you that. I'm going to read you this as a true story. It's called Moral of an Almost Sobering Night Swim. I know there's a moral in this story, but I'm not really sure what the moral is. Anyway, I'm pretty sure that the call came in on a Saturday night when the bars were closing. It happened in the east end of Pittsburgh No. 5 Station. Most of the police were seasoned and knew the hovels of heathens. Well, Elmer was a local sinner and drunk, smelled of purple eggs and Slim Jim, steel cigarette smoke, and always dressed like someone rolled him up the hill with a stick. Elmer was known to all the badges because every week they would get a call from Madeline, his chubby little wife, and the mother of his seven little kids, that he was beating her like a tom-tom. So one night the call came, and two of the men in blue went there to serve and protect, and as usual they would pick Elmer up and take his drunken load and drive him 20 miles to bumfuck Egypt, kick him out from the police car, and make him walk home. But one night, one of the badges said, "Elmer, you can't paddle Madeline anymore. The next time that you use her as a drum, we're going to put you in the wagon, take you to Highland Park Bridge, and torch your drunken ass in the Allegheny." They left, and as sure as beer grows muscles, they got another call to serve and protect. And sure enough, Elmer was standing on the front porch with clenched fists. So they grabbed and cuffed and tossed Elmer in the back of the wagon. "Well, Elmer, you just will not listen, and we're going to throw your drunken ass in the Allegheny, and we're going to tell everyone you jumped." Elmer said, "Kiss my ass. It's a shame Madeline and the kids won't miss you, and even the dog will be wagging his tail when he hears you're gone. Kiss my ass." One of the officers said, "You sure swear a lot, Elmer. I think you should be praying, because pretty soon you're going to swim your way to St. Peter. Kiss my ass." So they drove Elmer to the center of the bridge. One bad cop grabbed him by the arms, and the other good cop grabbed Elmer by his legs, and they swung him. 1, 2, 3, and one of the fine officers let Elmer's arms by Elmer, and his head goes 6 feet out into the thin air. Elmer screaming, but the good cop held onto his legs. The good cop who held the legs turned pale and yelled, "Holy shit!" The bad cop walked back to the wagon. It took about 3 minutes for the good cop to drag Elmer back. Elmer sat on the curb with his feet dangling in the gutter, and he was sobbing and praying the Hail Mary. "I promise never to use Madeline as a tom-tom again." They took Elmer home, and he was a changed man. The good and the bad cop retired, having grown gracefully old, and sometimes can be found fishing for cat under the bridge, and they can verify the moral of truth, and if Elmer's dead, they might even break the code of silence. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you next week. All right. Thank all of you. See you.